Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome, you guys. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and
I'm Marty.
I have to point the right way. Oh my gosh. Marty and I are here and we're going to talk to you today. I know, right? This is where you come for a good time talking about strange things with your dogs and cats. Like, what can I say? And one of the questions that we see all the time is, why is my dog licking her feet? Why does she have those terrible eye stains? Why is my dog digging in their ears? Right? Like, three top questions, Marty, or that's got to be three of the top five.
Yeah, especially in the late summer and fall in our climate, but it can be year round in other places. So yes, there are two good things about living in Wisconsin. One is the allergens go away, and two is the parasites go away. But otherwise,
it's because they're under a foot of snow, Marty, just gonna say.
I'm aware. I mean, like, I've got a foot of snow. My dogs are looking at me like, you want me to go where?
Yeah. No, your dogs are not a foot tall. I mean,
I know. They're like, this is a little much.
I need a snorkel, Mom. I need a snorkel.
Exactly. So there's little trails through my yard. All right. So this time of year in Wisconsin, we don't see much for allergies. But in other parts of the country where it's pleasant year-round, we do. So one of the most common things we do see is foot chewing, licking, biting, scratching, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is a pet peeve. I'm just going to share this with you at the beginning. Is I have staff that comes out of the exam room and says, the dog is itching. I said, you cannot see an itch. The dog is scratching, biting, licking, chewing, rolling, some kind of description of what's going on to describe that the dog has an itch, but the dog cannot tell us they have an itch because you cannot see that sensation. So
the itch is the sensation, the scratching is the action.
Right, that goes with the sensation.
Got it.
So we see lots of lesions, lots of skin, lots of problems. So foot licking is a very common syndrome. And I'll have clients that come in, and when the dog's been licking their feet, especially if they're a light-colored dog or a dog with a light-colored foot, they'll come in with that rust-colored. Sometimes it looks as bad as blood sometimes, and it's usually not blood. It's usually the rust-colored. And that comes from the porphyrins, which are in the saliva. And it's also in the tears. So that's when we see tearing, we see biting, licking, that kind of stuff at the feet. That we see that rust color occur because porphyrins
and
in the
potty
saliva,
area, right? Like where they sometimes pee on themselves sometimes.
If they lick themselves there a lot too. So again, I walk in the exam room and I look at a dog and say, your dog is chewing his feet. They're like, no, he's not. I can tell he is. Some of the dogs have gotten smart enough to say, well, I'm not going to be able to do this in front of my owner because every time I do, they yell at me. So they become closet lickers. They go in the other room to lick their feet. It's not that they're not still doing it. They're just smart enough to know that you're going to give them a hard time about it. So like, okay, if I'm in the other room, they don't yell at me. So I'm just good. So it is really common. I remember as a kid having a neighbor with a poodle and they would say, oh, she just likes to lick her feet. No, they don't like to do it. They do it because their feet are uncomfortable.
Right.
So they do it in response to the sensation that we perceive as being an itch. Now, a long time ago, we used to say that the dogs were only responding to the inhaled allergens and that the mast cells in the dogs were, instead of being in their respiratory tract where we have hay fever, runny eyes, runny nose, that they're in their feet. Well, they did some really elegant studies about 20 years ago and they determined that this is actually partly a contact allergy and partly an inhaled allergy. But collectively, we kind of lump them all together and we call it atopy or atopic dermatitis. Now, people also have atopy. It presents a little bit differently, but it's still basically the same syndrome, is that you have an allergic reaction to a pollen, a mold, a dust mite, something that causes you to have this itching sensation.
So it's in the grass, it's in the leaves that fall off the trees.
The molds that you know, when the leaves blow up around the corner mm-hmm. of your house and they're kind of that beautiful smell of fall, that's mold. Don't get all that excited about it. That's mold. It's bad.
You just took away all my excitement about going and
sorry.
Rolling around in a pile of raked up sorry. Leaves.
That's mold. Don't get excited about it.
Nasty.
So, yeah. And then dogs can also have food allergies. They can have flea allergies. Mm. They can have contact allergies. So those are the most common kinds of allergies that we see are atopic dermatitis, food allergy, flea allergy, and contact allergies. So contact allergies would be if you have a wool carpet or a wool blanket, which very few people have anymore, that the dog is in contact with that. Or if it's certain laundry soaps, things like that, that the dog's allergic to when they touch it. Flea allergies, we're pretty well under control now because we have so many good flea products on the market, the flea and tick products. There's orals, there's topicals, there's injectables, and there's a collar. We don't have nearly the flea and tick issues that we used to. And the flea allergy is causing these issues. Now, if you have a flea allergy, in cats, it's around their neck and above their tail. In dogs, it's almost always this little triangular spot right above their tail mm-hmm. where the fleas like to hang out. And that's where the dog is uncomfortable. And they lick, bite, chew, scratch, roll, all that stuff there. So those are a lot easier to figure out now than they used to be. But atopic dermatitis is still a big deal in dogs. And I think we're probably going to see it inadvertently get worse. Because number one, a lot of the dogs that are coming through as rescues or not intentionally mm-hmm. bred dogs, we aren't eliminating those dogs from the gene pool. And number two is we're so much better with controlling these symptoms now that a lot of people are breeding their dogs that have allergies. Mm-hmm. And so we're not deliberately, but sort of unintentionally breeding dogs with allergies because we can control them pretty well. And we don't have a DNA test for allergic dogs, at least mm-hmm. not yet. And dogs typically don't develop allergies until at least their second summer and sometimes later than that in their life. And so by then, if someone was deliberately purpose-bred or purebred dogs that are being bred, by the time you've bred them, you've already bred dogs that had allergies and you didn't know it. So it wasn't like somebody went out and said, I would like to breed an allergic dog. That right. sounds like a right. great goal for today.
Those Do you things. Make a now, distinction at all between, or it may just be a distinction without a difference. Do you make a distinction between a dog that has sensitive skin and a dog that is specifically allergic, or to you, they're the same thing?
It's sort of the same thing on a continuum. It's just worse if they have these allergies. Now, food allergies are hard to chase down because that's something that the dog gets all the time in their diet, and it can be really difficult to figure those out. So we see dogs with food allergies that have a lot of these same syndromes. And at least where I live, the best time to figure out a food allergy is in the wintertime when we don't have the molds and the pollens to deal with. So we're better able to take those dogs, put them on a hydrolyzed protein or a food elimination diet, and then determine if the dog got better on a special diet. And that takes 12 weeks of intensely feeding that dog only the diet that your veterinarian prescribed. No table scraps, no treats, no rawhides, no yak bones, no nothing else. No, let's just slip them a little potato chip under the table. Nothing else for 12 weeks. And if we can get those dogs better after 12 weeks on that hydrolyzed protein or hypoallergenic diet, then we know that the dog has a food allergy. But a lot of dogs that have a food allergy also have a pollen allergy, a flea allergy, a mold allergy, something else. And so they're additive. So a dog that may be comfortable with their food allergy in the wintertime, you add to it the pollen allergy and it crosses the threshold. Mm-hmm. And then in the summer, the fall, the dogs just, pew, everything blows up. However, we have new drugs that make all of this a lot easier to manage.
Easier to manage.
Doesn't make the allergies go away. We can't cure allergies in dogs any more than we can cure allergies in people. If we could, like, I would not be practicing medicine in Wisconsin. I would be living on a tropical island all by myself. I would own the island and I'd be wealthy, but we can't figure that out. So we have two classes of drugs that are relatively new, 10 years and less on the market. Since the 1960s, we've had prednisone and other steroids that do a good job of managing allergies. In typical dogs, antihistamines don't work very well. Benadryl, Claritin, all those, Zyrtec, those typically don't work very well in dogs. They work a little, but not great. But we have two new drug classes that have been on the market less than 10 years, or 10 years and thereabout. One is the IL-31s, which are going to be Apoquel, which a lot of people are familiar with, and the new one, Zenrelia. So we have an A and a Z drug because that makes it easy to figure out. So we have Apoquel that now comes as a tablet and a chewable and a generic, and then Zenrelia, which is similar to Apoquel. And then we have Cytopoint. Cytopoint is a monoclonal A antibody that affects the cycle of the itch, scratch, thing. So those drugs are interesting. Apoquel has been on the market 10 plus years. They now have a chewable that's, of course, hypoallergenic, and it does a good job with a lot of dogs with allergies. Zenrelia is supposed to work on maybe 10 or 15% more dogs than the Apoquel does. So if you had a dog on Apoquel that either was working and it quit working or it doesn't work very well, Zenrelia would be something to talk to your veterinarian about. These are all prescription items. The problem with Zenrelia is you're not supposed to use it within 30 days of a vaccination, so that makes things a little tricky. That recommendation has gotten a little bit softer, but it's still there. And then Cytopoint is an injectable. So Apoquel and Zenrelia are tablets you take home, you give it to the dog once a day. Cytopoint is an injection that the dogs get every 4 to 5 weeks, depending on the dog. And it's a monoclonal A antibody that blocks that itch scratch cycle. And it's really pretty cool because the dogs that don't do well on one may do better on the other. So it's not like if your dog didn't do well on one that the other one's not going to work, because they're completely different drug classes, completely different drugs, and they can work. And then sometimes we have to layer them together. Sometimes in the really bad part of the year, we have to add prednisone to the, like August and September where we are, ragweed, goldenrod, terrible. So some of those dogs that are pretty comfortable in the spring with the tree pollens and pretty comfortable in the summer with grass pollens, they get to fall and things just don't go well. They go off the rails. Sometimes we have to add additional drugs together to keep the dogs comfortable and keep you from listening to them scratch all night long at their collar. So take the tags off the dog, take the collar off the dog. And if that's not working, then talk to your vet about drugs.
Is there a way to identify? So let's say my dog just licks his feet, but his ears are fine and he doesn't have any runny eyes. Like, do we have a way to say food is this or grass is that, or it's all just bad?
It's all kind of the same, unfortunately. Really, there are some blood tests on the market that people use to determine what the dogs are allergic to. And I think there's also a saliva test. They're not terribly useful. The dermatologists don't recommend them. I don't typically run them because I don't think they're very helpful. There is still skin testing available where you go to the vet, the dermatologist, and they shave a big patch of hair off your dog's side, and then they inject these little allergens, and they determine what the dog developed a lump or a wheal from, and then they can determine what your dog's allergic to. And then you can do hyposensitization, either as injections or as oral drops, to reduce the dog's allergic reaction to that product. But if it's something like ragweed, you're not going to get rid of ragweed unless you move to Siberia. That's just going to be everywhere in the environment. So you can hyposensitize or reduce the sensitivity of the dog to those allergens, but we cannot cure allergies. I wish we could cure allergies. Allergies can be managed. They cannot be cured. And that, I think, is one of the reasons people change veterinarians frequently, is they don't get the information from their vet that we're going to control this, but we can't cure it. So we're going to make the best of it, but it's going to cost you some money. It's going to require ongoing medication. And if you think your vet failed to cure your dog's allergies, you failed to understand what your veterinarian can actually do. Yeah. Sadly, can't cure allergies.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
I think that's a hardship. I mean, God knows those of us in the dog world think that veterinarians are gods because, you know, you solve all the problems. But I think it's important for people to understand man plans and God laughs is a thing that I'm pretty sure veterinarians have tattooed on some portion of their anatomy.
Somewhere you can't see. Yep. Or shouldn't see anyway.
Shouldn't
if
see.
You
no.
see your, yeah. If you see that, you should probably, yeah, not.
No.
Yeah, don't do that.
So I guess the advice then to the listener, to the person who has the dog that's frantically licking its feet and you have to like leave the room because you're going to lose your mind, then get into the veterinarian and trust that the veterinarian cannot entirely make this go away. They can make it better.
Right.
For some of the time, but.
Right. If they talk about a food elimination diet, a hydrolyzed protein diet, all those things, great. And if you want to see a dermatologist, ask your veterinarian for a referral because they may be able to send you to somebody. But ain't nobody curing allergies these days. So someday we may be able to DNA test for it and prevent it. Someday we may be able to manage it better. But as much better as the drugs are, and if you watch the TV commercials, they frequently have all these psoriatic arthritis and psoriatic dermatitis and all these different skin problems that people have. We're using drugs in the same drug class. But of course, a monoclonal A antibody for a dog is different than a monoclonal A antibody for a human. So you have to understand that there are going to be differences, and they're expensive to treat some of these dogs with some of these drugs. But if your dog is more comfortable, by all means, do it. Maybe your dog has to sleep in another room. Maybe you take the collar off, put tag silencers on the tags so that the dog doesn't scratch all night. And a lot of these dogs do have a component of ear infections as well. So if you are seeing recurrent chronic ear infections with your dog, talk to your vet about, is there a food elimination diet? Is there another medication we can use? Just putting eardrops in the ear is putting a Band-Aid on it, but it's not getting to the source of the problem. So really have some serious conversations with your veterinarian about the whole picture, about what can I do for my dog? You know, where are we going from here? Why is this happening? Is there better food? And don't just kind of randomly start picking things off the shelf. Ask your veterinarian for some help, because every protein and carbohydrate that you use on your own now eliminates that as a possibility for a client to use. I had a dog in yesterday that they've had a lot of problems with. And I said, well, you know, I need a list of all the food and all the treats that you have given, but I'm not going to do that at the exam in the exam room. Send me the list. And then we're going to go through it and figure out what we can do for you to try and eliminate some of these carbs or protein sources and figure out what your dog may be allergic to. If you notice something, like you dropped your pizza on the floor and the dog ate the piece, or it sneaked it off the table. Let's face it, that happens.
Agatha.
And the dog's ears, the ears suddenly got worse. Maybe it's a wheat allergy. Maybe it's an allergy to some component of the pizza. So those are really important conversations to have and notes to take of what you're noticing at home is keep track of those things. So when you go to the veterinarian, you are organized. You have a list of, I know he can't eat chicken, or I know he can't eat this. So bring those things in, and your veterinarian is going to be better able to help you with a food elimination diet, with a product that works. And frankly, some of these oral medications do not work well on food allergies. So unless you eliminate the food from the diet, you may have these ongoing problems.
So I think it's really important, and this is where I would always run into conversations with people, whether, you know, when I was handling clients or whatever, they're like, well, I changed his food. For how long? Well, he didn't like it, so I changed him to another food. For how long? Well, then he had a brain. Okay, so important. I know he's allergic to chicken. How do you know? How do you actually know?
Right.
It could be he's allergic to X, Y, or Z instead. So can you just walk us through the steps of what that looks like? Your dog is going to eat a diet that is nothing but X for 3 months.
12 weeks.
Not three minutes, 3 months.
Right. And I do listen to the dogs. I have had the experience on a few occasions with dogs that the clients come in and say, he's just a really picky eater. And I say, oh, well, that's interesting. Tell me about that. Well, yeah. And they'll go through this whole scenario. And I'm like, you know, I'm pretty sure your dog has a food sensitivity. It may not be risen to the level of an allergy, but it's a food sensitivity. And if your dog is eating enough just to stay alive, but that's all, and they're really not thriving on their food, you may perceive that as being a picky eater. Like, peppers do not agree with me. I'm not allergic to them. I don't have facial swelling. I don't have any allergic reaction. They don't agree with me. If you put peppers on my pizza, I'm not going to eat the pizza. Right. And your dog is potentially telling you the same thing. So if I have a dog that's saying, I'm not going to eat that food, I kind of listen to him as the veterinarian and the owner saying, well, let's put out three different kinds of food and let the dog pick the one that they like. And they're not just picking it because it tastes good. They're picking it because it agrees with them.
Mm.
So yes, there are some components of this that some nuances, if you let your dog tell you what they want to do, you may learn something. So put them in bowls separate from each other enough that the dog can go over, smell it, pick it out, taste it. If you put the dog on something different and they suddenly start to eat and you're like, oh my goodness sakes, you have never eaten like this before. Your dog has been telling you for its whole life, I don't feel good when I eat this food. I'm going to barely eat enough to stay alive, but that's it. So I think that's really important. There are two different kinds of food elimination diets that you can do. You can do one that you eliminate everything and then add one thing back at a time, one protein, one carbohydrate back at a time as just a regular food. So say you start with lamb or you start with pork or you start something and then you add things back. That's where we basically have just determined that this is a whole food that the dog eats and agrees with or doesn't agree with. Mm. On the other hand, we have these hydrolyzed protein diets. Purina makes one called HA, Hill's makes one called ZD, Royal Canin makes one called HP, hydrolyzed protein. So basically what that is the company makes the food into hydrolyzed protein, meaning that they break it down into molecules that are smaller than 10,000 Daltons a piece, and they basically slip through the dog's immune system, and the dog doesn't react to it.
Interesting.
So for 12 weeks, your veterinarian may put you on one of those hydrolyzed protein diets. And if everything goes really well, you can make a decision at that point. Do I feed exclusively this for the rest of their life? Or do I systematically and routinely and very carefully say, okay, today we're going to add corn for a week and we'll see what happens. And then we're going to add wheat for a week and see what happens. And then we're going to add pork for a week and see what happens. So you can very specifically be able to say, he did great on wheat, he did great on corn, I added the pork, and his ears blew up or his feet started itching, scratching, licking, biting, chewing, that this is something that we know is now on the do not feed list versus the okay to feed list. And it can take a year to do this really effectively, but I have clients that come in, it's like a weight is lifted off of their shoulders when they finally figure out what it is. And you have to read the bags of food really carefully, the ingredient list. So you have to turn around the bag, not on the front where it says lamb and rice, but on the back where it lists all the other ingredients, where you have to put on your bifocals and you have to squint at it and read it, get out your magnifier, or else pull
the light on your cell phone if you turn on the flashlight.
Or pull up the ingredient list on the internet and make it big on your computer. Because the label may include things that you didn't know were there because it may say lamb and rice on the front, but on the back, it may say a number of other protein or carbohydrate sources that the dog is allergic to. So this can take some really sleuthy detective work on the part of you and your veterinarian. And your vet cannot do this if you are not cooperative.
Right.
If you have a 2-year-old in the house that's throwing food off the table, if grandma keeps slipping chicken to the dog under the table, if you take the dog to a picnic and somebody feeds him half of brat, your vet cannot fix that problem. So you have to be really regimented if you decide that you're going to do a food elimination diet. I had a client in today. She and her husband live by themselves. Kids are home from college. They left today. They have plenty of time to do this kind of a food elimination diet on their own. But if you live in an average household where there's forces that you cannot control called children. Or grandma,
all of the above,
grandpa,
right?
Yeah. Then you may be destined to fail a food elimination diet. And so just be honest with your vet and say, I don't think we can make this work in our lives. I have too many. I had a lady in today has
nine children.
Like, you are not going to overcome what 9 children want to do because they are going to do their own thing. Nothing wrong with 9 kids, but it's pretty hard to get everybody aligned to say we are going to be able to manage this.
Ducks in a row. Talk really briefly, if you would, about, you know, some of the things that I've seen over the course of time, that what starts as an allergy turns into a yeast infection, turns into a staph infection, turns into something that's a whole nother bottle of wax if you don't deal with it in a timely manner.
Right. And the underlying problem being an allergy. So if you can manage the allergy, you can control a lot of those things, but they may need ketoconazole for the yeast. They may need an antibiotic for the bacterial infection. They may need something in the ears, which is different than something on the feet. What's really kind of interesting is I went to a meeting on dermatology a number of years ago, the dermatologist had a dog that came in that kept having dermatitis around her lips. And it turned out she was licking the dog with the ear infection's ear. And so she kept picking up yeast from his ear on her lips. So there's a lot of layers to this. So it's not just about one dog. It's not just about one thing. And the other thing to remember is that we do see mites causing some of these issues.
Right.
So we can see skin mites, we can see ear mites, we can see chlamydia, we can see scabies, we can see demodex. Mm-hmm. So if you go into your veterinarian and they want to do a skin scraping and they want to do a skin cytology looking for, is it yeast, is it bacteria, is it a mite? Those are all really important tests to determine what the underlying problem is along with the allergy. So allergies come with these other layers and they're kind of interesting. Now that we have Bravecto, Credelio, Simparica, mm-hmm. and NexGard, mm-hmm. a lot of the dogs that probably had mite infections like Demodex, we may never see those anymore because those medications are doing such a good job controlling those. So accidentally, you may have people that are breeding dogs with Demodex, which is a genetic disease, a genetic tendency to have mites living in the hair follicles that can set us up for some of these dogs to have failure, not because anybody meant to breed dogs with mm-hmm. mite issues, mm-hmm. with Demodex issues, but because it happens. And now there's actually a condition in people where they have Demodex in their eyelashes. Do you know about this?
Yeah, I've heard
about it. Yeah, they have them in their eyelashes. Sometimes it's because they're not practicing good hygiene. I was told by somebody the other day, old men that don't wash their faces, or women that wear those big eyelashes now, those artificial eyelashes.
Stick on, yeah.
Yeah. And so they're seeing more Demodex in the eyelashes of people. And there's actually a drug that's the same as Credelio for your dogs, for fleas and ticks, that is used as an eye drop for people with this. And if you want to have a really good giggle,
Do not put your dog's Credelio in your eye.
No, no, don't do that. But if you want a good giggle, go watch the commercial and then watch the woman who was the actress of being the mite, the head mite in the commercial. She's a comedian and she is so freaking funny.
Oh my God.
You will just crack up. So if you have Demodex in your eyelashes or you want to know more information about the drug, you can Google it.
I do not want to know anything about bugs in my eyelashes. Never wanted to know it in the first place.
But it's fun.
Quick, it is. It is. It is so fun. Quick clarification, because I wanted to make sure I heard you right. Demodex in dogs, when you're talking about a juvenile Demodex, when their immune system isn't fully grown up, it's a different thing than when you see it in an adult dog, or no?
It is a deficiency of the B cells in the immune system.
And
those dogs have a genetic...
They can't bite the mites.
Correct. Every human, every dog is born exposed to Demodex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Coming through the birth canal, you're exposed to Demodex. If you're a dog and you have a B cell deficiency, you can become either localized or generalized affected by Demodex. Mm. So we know Demodex has a genetic component to it.
Mm.
Scabies is a different thing. Scabies mites and chlamydia mites are from exposure to other animals that carry those. But Demodex lives down deep in the hair follicles and it has a genetic predisposition. So if your vet walks in the room and says, I did a skin scraping and your dog has Demodex, yeah, don't breed that dog.
Right.
Don't use that dog for breeding. And like I said, even though Credelio, NexGard, Bravecto, and Simparica are not labeled for that use, they're labeled for fleas and ticks, we have a pretty good indicator that it works for that. So mm-hmm. we're going to accidentally see dogs being bred that have those Demodex tendencies with the breeders not being aware of it because they've had their dog on medication to prevent fleas and ticks. And as a result, didn't end up with Demodex, and so we may see some dogs develop that. So be aware of that. And remember that Bravecto now has a one-year injectable product that takes care of fleas and ticks. You go to your vet, you get one injection, and it lasts for 12 months, and you don't have to give a pill, you don't have to put on a collar, you don't have to put on a topical.
Amazing.
And it kills fleas and ticks. It's really cool. I just gave it to my dog the other day.
Yeah.
2 days ago, I gave it to Olga.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Excellent. All right, Marty, thank you so much from snowy Wisconsin. Have yourself a fantastic week ahead.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun,
fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.